I do. And then when they called me, I was supposed to come down here. I give this to my grandson to keep, mm-hmm. and I had to go get it back mm-hmm. from him.
Yeah. You mentioned Ernie Pyle. So he was there.
You mean you never heard of Ernie Pyle?
No, I've heard of him. I know he was a reporter.
Yeah.
But I know that he died in over there.
He was over in Europe. Mm-hmm. Spent his time over in Europe. And when Europe War was over, instead of coming back to the United States, well, he come right direct over to the Pacific. He wanted to see what it was like over there.
Mm-hmm.
And on that island that we secured for the air bases, it had a little road and ditches on both sides. And this was before we had it secured. But anyway, I don't know why he done this, but him and a couple of officers in a Jeep come down that road, and the Japs started shooting at him, and they jumped out of the Jeep and went down into the and into the ditch.
Mm-hmm.
And Ernie stuck his head up, and that's when he got it.
Oh, okay. Hmm. He was very, very popular, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
And he wrote. Did he write for the Stars and Stripes?
He was one of the. He stayed with the troops. Okay. Most of the reporters stayed in the back, you know, and, mm-hmm. and wrote up what was told. But
okay, lost a buddy. Mm-hmm. And you said you were very close. That must have been very difficult.
Yeah, about 200 feet.
And had he been with your unit for a while? Had he been with you for a while?
Yeah, he was with from the time when he got over into Pacific, he joined up with the 77th Infantry Division. He's with the 77th Infantry Division all the time.
Okay.
I don't know why he picked the 77th, but he did.
Mm-hmm. Well, like you say, didn't they call him like something like the soldiers reporter because he did stay with the soldiers?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was right up on the front lines all the time, but he didn't carry a gun. He carried a notebook and papers and stuff like that, but mm-hmm. he never carried a gun.
Well, this does look like a good book.
Oh, it's absolutely the truth. I mean, most of these things you read about now is half truth and half guess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that is absolutely facts from mm-hmm. start to finish in the Pacific.
When you were over there fighting, were you aware of how many lives were being lost? Some of the men I talked to said they knew that a lot were being lost, but it wasn't until they got back home when they finally realized.
Well, most generally when the island was secured, well, they'd tell you how many got killed, like here on Okinawa. But see, on this, it says the same thing in the book, but I pasted that in there that I cut out of a paper a long time ago.
And it was an 81 day campaign.
Yeah.
Were you there for the whole 81?
No, I was there until I got wounded on
the
28th
right.
day of May.
Okay.
From April the 1st to the 28th day of May.
Mm-hmm. So 12,520 Americans, but 110,000 Japanese. Yeah. Hard fought. Mm-hmm. Well, did they then, I know in Europe they established cemeteries. Did they establish cemeteries over there?
I don't think so, unless maybe they might have established one on Okinawa, but on all the rest of them, I guess they shipped the dead home if they could find them and get them together up.
Mm-hmm. And the training that you had received before you went over and in Hawaii, was that training sufficient, or was it just learn while you were there how to fight?
Well, it was basic infantry training.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when I was at Camp Roberts, I didn't know whether I was going to go to Europe or the Europe Asia or group or the Pacific group. But anyway, they gave you the training for the infantry, which would work either way, you know,
right,
either side. And it was good training.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone give you any helpful advice about fighting? Like, keep your head down?
It didn't take long to figure it out.
Okay. All right. So you learned on the job.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't take you long to figure it out either.
Yeah. And you said that you chose a particular weapon as you were moving in. So were you trained on that?
We was trained on all types of weapons, all the type of weapons we had. And that's another thing. When I was in Camp Roberts, in our company, they took us out on gun training, and that's on all type of the weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the best in our company, and I got a sharpshooter's medal for it.
Okay.
And I'm more proud of that than I am anything, any of the rest of it.
Now, did you, when you were growing up, did you hunt on the farm, or why were you so good?
Oh, I done some hunting, but I guess I was just better than the rest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because you were...
A farm boy always made a better soldier than a city boy.
Right.
Always.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they knew it, too.
Well, don't you think you were physically tougher and mentally tougher, maybe?
Well, I think so. And at that time, well, the young people still took instructions from their parents, you know, and stuff, which
mm-hmm.
now wouldn't apply.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, and you met young men from all over the United States.
Oh, yeah. Fact is, the 77th Infantry Division is a New York division.
Mm-hmm.
It's originated in New York.
And then did you, are there particular stories or something about good friends that you made during your time? Did you keep up with any of them after the war?
Well, the good friends that you make, they wasn't with you very long. I mean, they was in different divisions and stuff. Like on Guam, of course, on Guam when I was in the hospital, I was the only Army guy and a bunch of Marines, and nobody got along one another. But on Saipan, you had friends, but first thing you know, one went one way and one went somewhere else. So
uh-huh.
you didn't have any continuously friends. I mean, the
right.
same ones. You always had friends, but there never was the same ones.
Uh-huh. And then, were you able to send letters home and get letters from your parents?
Yeah, if you had time on Okinawa, I didn't have time to send any letters home. But otherwise, other places where if I had where I wasn't in combat, well, I'd try to send letters home.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when you wasn't in combat, well, about the only thing to do was either ride home or play poker or something like that.
Well, you must have been a good poker player, too.
Well, I wasn't really good, but I made a deal of it that I think we got paid $21 a month or something like that is what we got paid.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get paid over there, there wasn't nothing to do with it, no reason to have it. So we'd all get in a poker game. And if I was the winner, a good winner for that night, I'd go to the and send it all home.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wouldn't go back. A lot of guys, they'd win one night and go back the next night and lose it again. But
mm-hmm.
if I won it, I sent it home.
And you said that, you had enough to get a car?
Yeah, I bought a new car nice car for $1,400 and a new tractor, mini upswing tractor for $1,600.
Well, that was a lot of money.
Yeah. $21 per person, but you know, if you had 100 people sitting around, $21, well, and there was no reason to try to save it over there because it wouldn't do any good. There's nothing you could buy.
Right. Well, where did you learn to play poker when you went into the service?
Huh?
Where did you learn to play poker?
This buddy down here by Montezuma that was with me on the Hawaiian Islands,
mm-hmm.
he's the one that learned me to play poker, okay. and then he wished he never had because...
You probably took some of his money.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't think of his, but he lived down here. He was on a farm down here north of Montezuma.
And most of the young men, were they married or not?
Some of them were, some weren't.
And did most of them smoke? Did you smoke?
All of them smoked. Everybody, all of them smoked. The Army furnished free cigarettes, you know, and then in your ration pack for your meal, there were cigarettes in there and stuff like that, and everybody smoked.
Mm-hmm. What about drinking? Were there any, there probably weren't opportunities, though, to drink.
Well, on Saipan and on Pelew Islands, when we had a night off or something like that, well, a bunch of us might get together and buy a case of beer, you know, or something like that. And, mm-hmm. But when you was in combat, you didn't do none of that. You just tried your best to stay alive, and that
right.
was it.
And certainly while you were over there, there was holidays like Thanksgiving and Christmas. But were you even aware of holidays?
No, I didn't. It didn't mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Holiday over there was, at that time was just another day.
And were you able to receive mail from your parents?
Yeah, if sometimes it'd be a month.
Mm-hmm. And did they send you
get it.
Did they send you anything?
My folks did. They wrote to me quite a bit.
Would they send you a package of anything?
No.
Because some people said they got cookies, but they were all crumbs by the
time. Well, over there in Pacific, you know, the humidity is always 100%.
Yeah.
And the temperature is always around 100 degrees, so mm-hmm. yeah, something like that wouldn't have went over very good.
Right.
Over in Europe now, that would have worked pretty nice, but over in Pacific mm-hmm. it wouldn't.
But did in your rations, you got like chocolate bars and things like that?
Well, those K rations had some kind of a chocolate bar or something in them, candy bar or something, but it was the type that didn't melt. I don't know what it was made out of, but it tasted kind of like chocolate, but mm-hmm. it wouldn't melt, you know. Mm-hmm. But really, well, when we was down on Pelew Islands, we ate in the kitchen. When I was on Saipan, I ate in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in the hospital in Guam, I ate in the kitchen. But otherwise, most generally, it was just sea rations, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. When you were sitting around visiting, you know, with your fellow soldiers, did you talk about what you missed most?
Oh, I suppose we'd go around showing everybody our pictures of our girlfriends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when you started home, was there one thing that you wanted to do when you got home immediately, a particular meal or something like that?
Not really.
Okay.
I can't.
Did it seem like it was a long time that you were over there?
Well, I was, from the time I left home till I got back was a little over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But there really wasn't nothing that I really wanted.
Just to get home.
Yeah.
Get that new car.
Yeah. But I didn't have the new car then. Because they held up here at Garden. My folks had him ordered. But that's when they were still rations, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to get home. And the veterans had first chance of buying that stuff, so I had to get the papers filled out so I'd go buy it. And then it took, I guess it was a couple of months after I got home before they finally got it. American Motors finally shipped it out. But, you know, everything was closed down for the wartime. And,
mm-hmm.
and when and I got it, it had wood bumpers on it because they couldn't get any chrome.
Really?
So it had wood bumpers bolted onto it. And then maybe 4 or 5 months later, they got around to send the chrome bumpers out, you know, and mm-hmm. fixed it like it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Was rationing still in effect then with gas and sugar and things like that when you got home?
No, it was that was over with when I got home.
Okay.
Or I don't remember nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was on, I know, when I left, though, you had to have ration tickets to buy gas.
Well, and even tires and things, didn't they?
Yeah, tires. You had to have rations for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll come back to when you came home, but you, of course, were in the Pacific, and did did they educate you in any way about the Japanese and that how they fought before you went there?
Oh yeah, they give you an idea of what they would do if they got a chance to do it. Mm-hmm. But was the point. You didn't want to give them the chance.
Right, yeah. Okay. And then when you look back at that experience, I know you said that, you know, it made people grow up because, you know, you just took orders and you did what you were told and what you knew you had to do. How else do you think that experience changed you or affected you in your life?
Oh, I don't think that, well, it made you a lot stronger and everything like that from all that training, you know, and stuff, but mm-hmm. It was just, I wouldn't take $1 million for the experience again, but I wouldn't, I mean then, but I wouldn't do it again for 10 million.
Yeah, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I don't think I don't know if it made any difference in my life or not.
Okay. Is there one, if you, and I don't know, if when you came home, did you talk about the war much?
Not very much. Okay. Not unless somebody had asked, you know.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular story or something that you might tell them? Or in a particular experience?
No, I didn't. I just went over there and come back and been in the hospital and went over across the equator twice.
Okay. All right. Well, that's important. Okay. So you were coming home. Did you, I'll look at this in a little bit. Did you know what you were going to do when you got home?
Yeah, I was going to farm. That's okay. Why I had a tractor order.
Mm-hmm.
Fact is, I had some ground rented before I went, was drafted. And the folks tried to keep the farm going and stuff, so I knew what I was going to do when I got back that I was going to farm, and that's mm-hmm. what I wanted to do, too.
And how long did it take you to get the tractor that you'd saved money for?
Oh, I think it only took about maybe 3 or 4 months after I got out and got the paper signed for it. You had to have the paper signed to get that stuff. You just couldn't go buy it. I got the tractor and I was supposed to pick it up over at Dodge City. And I went over to pick it up and I rode it home on the highway.
Hmm.
And I'll bet you there was a half dozen people stopped me and wanted to buy that tractor.
You say, no, I won that fair and square through poker. And did it have the regular tires on, the rubber tires?
Yeah, it had rubber tires.
Okay. And at that time, you could just drive it on the highway.
Yeah, they had rubber tires in.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, I could have doubled my money on the dang thing if I'd have, but that wouldn't have been fair because I had the right to buy it, but I was supposed to keep it.
Right.
And that's what I done, too.
Mm-hmm. And so, what time of the year did you get home then?
In February.
And then you started farming?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I left in February and got back in February, so I was going 2 years
mm-hmm.
total.
And then you got married?
Yeah, I got married the 15th of March.
Okay.
After I got back.
Mm-hmm. And then you...
That's where most of my letters come from.
Yeah. Did she save your letters?
Huh?
Did she save your letters that you sent?
I don't think so.
Or did you save the one she sent?
No. You couldn't save them over there because, you know, you just didn't have... It ain't like these people now that flies on airplanes. I see them dragging along 2 or 3 bags, you know.
Yeah.
So you didn't do that then because the first place there wasn't room for it. So
mm-hmm.
the second place they wouldn't let you do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do have one question. How did you get water to drink? Did they?
They had tablets and them K rations when you was in combat. You dip the water out of the foxhole or any place you could find it and put a tablet in it, and that'd purify the water. It wouldn't clean it, but it'd purify it.
Okay.
And that's how you got water to drink when you was in combat. And of course, when you wasn't in combat, well, they had regular water, you know, at mess hall and stuff like that.
Was that hard to drink that water? Well,
not,
I guess if you
not was, when you're thirsty.
That's right. I like your attitude about this. Okay. All right, let me see. Let me check these. And while I'm looking to see if I covered all this, I'll ask you the final question. Is there one, you know, something that you think should be on tape that I have not, that we haven't covered? So think a minute while I run down this. Was there a particular fellow soldier or an officer that was significant or important or that you remember for a particular reason?
Not in combat, there wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when you was back at, or like going to Pelew Island and stuff, you had one you liked better than the rest, but in combat you just didn't have time to pick out the best or the worst or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You had a buddy in the foxhole, and then when we'd move up somewhere else, they'd change around, you know, so you never had the same one, same buddy or nothing. So.
And your colonel or sergeant or someone would change it?
Because they didn't want people to get, I guess, too buddy-buddy, because if they did, they'd forget what they was up for.
Right. Okay. Okay. And then I know, I wanted to ask you the question about when you were not in combat but sleeping in tents, did you have a bedroll, a blanket or something, or did...
It had a mattress. It was these army cots, you know, what you've seen, they fold up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they were army cots, and they had a mattress was about that thick.
And
I think maybe they might have had a blanket or two, or maybe a sheet.
And did you...
But anyway, they had a netting that... The army cots had a hole in each end that stuck a rod in, and that hole the netting up above you. But over in the Pacific, if you didn't have a netting or something, the bugs eat you up overnight.
Okay, what kind of bugs? Like mosquitoes? Or?
Mosquitoes, everything, all kinds of bugs. So, but you had the netting, you had the netting tucked in under the mattress on three sides,
mm-hmm.
or the two ends in one side, and then when you got in bed, you'd tuck it in under the other side. So. But if you didn't have that netting, you wouldn't sleep very much.
Did you have any kind of insect repellent, or did they even make it then?
No.
No. So when you were out in combat, there were always bugs around too, right?
Well, in combat, you was awake 99% of the time, so
okay.
If there's bugs chewing, you could swat them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You didn't get hardly any sleep in combat. I mean, it was maybe you'd doze off for 5 minutes, and that was it. That's why when I got shot in the shoulder twice, I got shot twice at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And when they operated on me and stuff, I didn't know a thing about it. I don't think they put me out. I think they just deadened it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so dang starved on sleep that I just went to sleep, and I didn't know if they moved me from one place to the other or anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally woke up, well, I was in an army cot in a tent.
Mm-hmm.
But man, you can get so sleepy, but you don't dare to go to sleep. If you do, you may stay asleep.
Yeah, but my goodness, when you're that tired, you probably would make mistakes too, I would think.
Well, I suppose, but the other side could too, you know.
Well, true. Well, when you were shot, did you know immediately you were shot?
Well, I had a backpack on.
Mm-hmm.
And it knocked me down, I mean, but I didn't actually know that I was shot. I thought maybe that it just hit in the backpack, but it went through the backpack and into my left shoulder on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me later on that when I was in the hospital at Guam that if it had went any further, it would have stopped my heart, but it didn't quite get there.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you have considered that luck or God looking out for you, or would you even have thought about it?
Well, I would call it luck. I mean, I don't think really anybody was looking after me, and I was, but
mm-hmm.
You either got it or you didn't, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
All there was to it.
Okay.
And there was two different types. I had the $1 million type, which meant that you got sent back to the hospital, and the other type was that you was dead, so
yeah,
that was it.
Yeah. Okay, so is there anything else that you want to say that for, you know, future people who are reading these that you might want them to know?
Well, I really don't. I know one thing. America's had the best army of anybody in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so much different than what it is now. That's what gets me, really. That's what really gets me.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly in your lifetime, you've seen a lot of changes and probably a lot.
But in World War II, we was attacked. So we had a perfect good reason to just tell them and everything else. Because
mm-hmm.
they attacked us first. But
right.
this Vietnam deal and this deal down here, we wasn't attacked first. And
mm-hmm.
and it seemed, and the Korean deal. Seems like when we was attacked, there was nobody could beat us. But when we wasn't attacked and stuck our nose in somebody
yeah.
else's, well, then it didn't go so good.
Mm-hmm. And it's not going so well now, is it?
The guys over there I know are doing the best they can and stuff, but it just, when you know you got to do it or they're going to take over the country and stuff, which Japan would have done probably
mm-hmm.
if they'd had a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it makes a lot of difference how you think about it and how you fight, how you. The aggression that you had to fight and stuff, and when you're over there, I feel sorry for the soldiers over there, but when they're over there fighting over a bunch of lies, that's a bad deal.
Mm-hmm. When you came home, of course, was there any thought in your mind that you might want to go to Korea and fight?
No.
Well, I just thought I'd ask.
No way.
Okay.
I had two boys over there, though.
In Korea?
Yeah. Well, not in Korea, in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
One of them got killed over there.
Oh.
And we had three boys, and two of them was at the right age, and they went to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. Did they ask your advice, or did they just want to do
Well, not really, because, see, they was in college, and they joined up with this ROTC.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I thought at the time was really a good deal because they got that training and it more or less made them grow up and made men out of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that Vietnam deal was coming along or
right.
else I wouldn't have let them run in.
Yeah.
But that's how they had to go over there because it was in the ROTC.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I feel sorry for them. They really didn't accomplish nothing, and they tried their best, and
I know. Yeah, sometimes it makes you wonder about war, period. It does. Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to talk about or say? Because I've covered these, and you talked about some things that other people hadn't, so, and I think your memory's very good, so.
Well. I don't know, it was, at least I didn't go to Canada or,
mm-hmm.
that's another thing that burnt me up too.
Yeah.
Go to Canada or declare myself a conscientious objector.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I just can't see that when you're attacked, if you don't feel like fighting your own, for your country. I don't know what the hell they're doing here.
Well, that's true. That's changed so much, you know.
And I didn't. I probably wouldn't have went if I hadn't been drafted, but I didn't regret being drafted.
Right.
And I didn't regret being over there either, because mm-hmm. there was a purpose for it. But
mm-hmm.
On Korea and Vietnam and this deal here, there really wasn't any purpose for it.
I know. Mm-hmm. When you went in, did they in your training and everything, did they talk to you about why we were in, and, you know, democracy and things like that?
Well, everybody knew why we was in.
Okay. I know. There is another question. When you were in combat, did you know how the rest of the war in the Pacific was going? Did you receive?
No, you didn't have the slightest idea.
Okay, so you had no way of receiving.
The only thing when it was in combat on Okinawa, we knew that was the last island, and the next.